Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
All righty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 20th day of January 2019. It's a holiday, and I got a sneeze coming on. No, I stopped it. No, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. It's weird how when you start talking, that comes out. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend and everything. I hope that you're having the day off. I hope that you're able to relax on Martin Luther King Day, reflect on Martin Luther King Day, and enjoy the Sunday night. Be up, stay up later, and maybe have an adult beverage if that's your thing. Or, you know, at a minimum, it'll screw up your garbage pickup for the week. Screwed up mine, which is fine because it's really cold and I didn't feel like putting the garbage out today or yesterday. Anyway, as such, I'm going to replay the second half of the show. I'm going to replay the Bo Snerdly interview because he is doing the Lord's work on his real name's James Golden. He's doing the Lord's work when it comes to the Republican Party. And the conservative movement, really, and conservative politics reaching out to the black community, even though he doesn't like that phrase, reaching out or outreach, same thing. But I thought I'd replay that, mostly because I didn't really follow the news over the weekend. I did some, but a bout of food poisoning hit my wife and youngest daughter. So there was a lot of vomiting over the weekend. What the hell? I'll just tell you. And that meant that I was on cleanup duty. I was on all the fun stuff. So I am going to take advantage of this. Exploit it. Exploit the suffering of my... I assume it was food poisoning. I hope it was food poisoning. Bailey's still a little sick. So hopefully she will stop. She's able to hold down liquids now, which is good. The doctors seem to think that she's okay. But, you know, a bottle full of chicken broth goes a long way, and Pedialyte and Gatorade and everything for everybody all around. It's been a fun weekend. Why couldn't this stuff happen on a Wednesday? You know, my wife could have used the day off of work to sleep in because she just laid on the couch all day Saturday and on the floor all night Friday. It's just a mess. Just a mess. I felt so bad for both of them, but they seem to be on the mend. But I could have used, I guess I wouldn't have gotten any time off of work. But hey, what the hell? They could have used it. Not that Bailey works. She's not pulling her weight, that Bailey. I'm one. I don't need to work. That attitude's got to change. That's the problem with the younger generation. Anyway, we've got some stuff to get to before we get to the James Golden, Bo Snerdly, Rush Limbaugh show interview. And let's get to it. But first, a nice hat tip to our sponsor, ancientlifeoil.com. The CBD oil, maybe that helped me fend off the food poisoning. I don't know because we can't figure out what they ate. CBD oil is really amazing. It at the end of the day, I have to wear reading glasses now because I'm getting older. And I just buy I used to have 20/10 vision in one eye and 20/15 vision in the other eye. Now, after years of working on a computer, I need these dime store glasses to stare at a computer screen. And it gives me a headache. It gives me eye strain. It just, at the end of the day, I'm like, I feel it right in the front of my head, right in my face. And CBD oil, few drops under the tongue, does an amazing job. It just goes away. It just melts away. It makes sleeping easier. It is a miracle, in my opinion. Whatever ails you on the inside, on the pain front, your joints ache, whatever, try some CBD oil. And try the best CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. 100% organic, pure stuff. It's not going to get you high. It's not riddled with THC. The THC is undetectable in it. So don't worry about that. You're not going to be, you know, drug tested and fired over that. What you will notice is a major difference. The stress in your life
will feel less. The stress in my eyes goes away. CBD oil is amazing. If you don't want to try the drops, they have a topical cream. Whatever it is you need, ancientlifeoil.com has it. And enter promo code Derek at checkout. Hit the apply button and boom, special savings just for us. They've been helping the show. You've been helping them. We all help each other as we try to fight against the forces of tyranny on the left. And we couldn't do it. Well, we could do it without them, but I don't want to do it without ancientlifeoil.com. So thank you and thank them and check them out. You don't got to buy somebody a gift. If you got somebody who's always bitching about their shoulder or their knees or something, get them some CBD oil. Don't go to this grocery store or the gas station or the 7-Eleven and try this weird stuff. No, this is the good stuff, ancientlifeoil.com. Don't forget promo code Derek. All right, well, where do we go from here? The impeachment trial starts tomorrow in earnest. The opening statements, it's going to be a made-for-TV event. I'll tell you, I find this hilarious because the left is trying to have their cake and eat it too. They want to say that in the House it was not a trial, it was a political thing, but in the Senate it must be a trial, and it's not a political thing, and it's an outrage that anybody would suggest it, and therefore the rules of criminal court apply, which they don't. The Senate gets to set their own rules, and it's still a political thing. But also the left is turning on their own. Jay Rosen. Do you know the name Jay Rosen? If you wonder why journalism is so bad, look no further than Jay Rosen. He is a professor at New York University, one of the most prestigious journalism schools around. He is a frequent cable news guest. He is as radical and left-wing as they come. And he's open about it. He has no semblance. It's kind of funny that somebody who's supposed to teach somebody on a profession that is supposed to be unbiased, just no problem at all revealing his bias and his contempt for anybody who disagrees with him politically. Just virtual dripping contempt. Well, the White House announced the president's legal team last week, at the end of last week. And in it, not an official member, he's going to be there presenting arguments about the unconstitutionality of the entire thing and the idea of impeaching a president for made up charges, is Alan Dershowitz, who was just on this show a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to get somebody this Friday, we'll see. But go back and listen to that Alan Dershowitz interview again. Alan Dershowitz is a famous lawyer. He has been a famous lawyer for almost the entirety of my life. There aren't very many, you know, when you think of lawyers and famous lawyers, there aren't very many that come to mind. Clarence Darrow, I suppose, is probably the most famous lawyer of all time. And Alan Dershowitz has been a famous lawyer at least before, well, I guess that's before OJ, was Klaus von Bülow. In the late 80s, he has been on the national scene, a wildly successful attorney, a wildly successful law professor, sold a lot of books. He is famous and successful. I guess I keep saying that. But nobody has questioned his credentials. Nobody has questioned his ethics. Nobody has really questioned his abilities until he decided to sign up for the Trump legal team. It's kind of funny. You have Jay Rosen, journalism professor, tweeting yesterday on Sunday the following, quote, "You would never know this from the Post," he's referring to a Washington Post story, "that Dershowitz is a TV lawyer, and no doubt selected for that reason. Without putting TV at its center, you cannot tell the story of why he's joined the team. What attracts him to the role? TV is a huge part of it." Essentially, now Alan Dershowitz, his entire life, has been a liberal in good standing. He defended Bill Clinton back during Bill Clinton's impeachment, and he was a hero to the left. He has always been a man of the left, but his fatal flaw, according to the new rules of the left, is that he is also honest, and he is also intellectually honest, which is the problem. The intellectual honesty is no longer a currency on the left. It is a hindrance. It is an obstacle to their objective, and anything that is an obstacle to their objective must be destroyed. So Alan Dershowitz, by signing on to the president's defense team, his legal defense team, even in an advisory role, in a semi-participatory role, has been expelled from the left. He's no longer pure enough. The purity test, the Democratic Party, the modern liberal movement, the progressive movement, makes what the Nazis did at Nuremberg with their racial purity laws. They make them look like pikers. It is nothing. The modern Democratic Party has a 100% absolute purity test. And if you fall short of that, no matter by how little, you are the enemy. You are to be destroyed. To refer to Alan Dershowitz as simply a TV lawyer is to undercut the man's entire career and every accomplishment he's ever had. He is a wildly successful lawyer. If you were ever in criminal jeopardy, you would kill for someone like Alan Dershowitz to be on your team. But because he signed up for Trump, he's just a TV lawyer. That's why he's there. What attracts him to the role? TV is a huge part of it. It couldn't be that Alan Dershowitz is intellectually honest. It has to be that Alan Dershowitz saw an opportunity to get himself on television more. Well, believe me, Alan Dershowitz doesn't need to be on television more. I believe he's in his 80s. He's got plenty of money. He's retired now from Harvard Law School, where he's professor emeritus, which is a title for we're still going to send him a check and he'll give a couple of speeches a year. I need to get me one of them kind of jobs. But ultimately, his only sin, the left didn't have a problem with him when he was representing OJ. The left didn't have a problem with him when he was representing any other of his clients whatsoever. No, not Jeffrey Epstein. No. Well, Jeffrey Epstein was a man of the left, so why would they have a problem with that? He need to get Jeff out of prison so that he can keep, you know, flying liberals around to pedophile island and donating large sums of money to them. No, he only became problematic when he decided that he would represent Donald Trump, that he would support Donald Trump's defense. That overturned every other accomplishment in the man's life. You think that this, well, the left, they're going out, they will eventually come after everybody. Absolutely everybody. That is what the left does. Look at the history of progressives around the world. The great Stalinist purges, the purges from Hitler, the purges from Mao, the wiping out of their own allies, the idea that you can somehow be on their team and be okay with you forever. No. No. If it's convenient for them, if it is important to them for holding on power or obtaining power, they will destroy you. So if you want to climb into bed with the left, go ahead. Just know full well that at someday it's going to be a black widow type relationship. Yeah, they'll screw you, and then they'll really screw you. They'll turn around and rip your head off and eat your body, because that's what they do. It's not about any individual. You'd want to talk about a collective. It is about the collective good. And the second somebody strays from the conga line, the second somebody moves off the thought plantation, they're fair game. And they not only can be destroyed, they must be destroyed, because dissent is not allowed on the left. Differing opinions are not allowed on the left. This is what kind of drives me nuts about the left, is they have this, you know, the SAG Awards were last night, the Golden Globes were a couple of weeks ago, the Oscars are coming up in the first couple of weeks or first week of February or whenever the hell it is. They have this idea. They've managed to market this idea, I should say, that the left is, oh, they're the party of the rebels. They're the party of individuals. Ooh, look at us. We are diverse. They are the largest enforcers of a concept of conformity you could ever possibly imagine. Think of a leftist. Think of a disagreement on the left, a political disagreement on the left. The closest thing you get to a political disagreement on the left is the degree to which the government should take over healthcare. That's it. And the amount of people who should have their student loan debt forgiven. Nobody's out there saying we shouldn't forgive student loan debt. These people signed up for this. It's their responsibility. Nobody's out there saying that. They're saying, well, should we forgive it for all people or just non-rich people? And then what constitutes rich? That's all the debate is. Should the government take over all of healthcare, or should the government allow private healthcare to continue for a little while and then eventually take it over? Those are the degrees of disagreement. That's it. If you're pro-life, forget it. You're run out of the party. You're not welcome in the party. My God, you would be primary challenged. If you dared express a pro-life thought, you would be done in the Democratic Party. But, you know, they're somehow the party of rebels. They're somehow the party of diversity. There is no diversity. Diversity to the left is different colored like-minded drones. That's it. Ask Condi Rice. Ask Clarence Thomas how much appreciation for diversity the left has. Ask them how tolerant the left is of their beliefs, of their right to disagree. You don't have a right to disagree. It's the ultimate conformity, get in line or we'll freaking destroy you party. Speaking of we'll freaking destroy you party, Bernie Sanders. Wow, a lot of you sent me the email of the Project Veritas audio. I didn't play it and didn't spend any time on it for very specific reasons. And this is not a knock against Project Veritas. It's very important what he does, what James O'Keefe and his group does. It's just that it's low-level nobodies. And I understand that if this guy were working for the Trump campaign and saying that we need to put some people in re-education camps, we need to do this, we need to do that, the media would be going absolutely crazy, even if it were some low-level volunteer. But the rules don't apply to the left. That being said, it is a low-level staffer. And it's not really a surprise that that's what Bernie Sanders thinks. For God's sakes, Bernie Sanders vacationed in the Soviet Union or honeymooned in the Soviet Union. Who the hell honeymoons in the Soviet Union? But that's what Bernie Sanders did. And more importantly, Bernie Sanders kind of says all of these things. He's right out in front with it. So that somebody who supports him and works for him is parroting these things, in harsher language and harsher terms, is not really earth-shattering, in my opinion. It's not news, in my opinion. That's just who they are. That used to be who the radical left was, but now it's who the left is. The left has moved so far, the Democratic Party has moved so far to the left. This is the norm. You could find anybody. You go to the Women's March over the weekend, and you will find crude, crass signs calling for the murder of people who dissent and the imprisonment of anybody who dares think differently. It is the party of conformity. So I didn't really harp on that because there was a lot of other things to talk about. And if you want to do it, if you want to see it, at a Bernie Sanders rally over the weekend, you can hear echoes of what Project Veritas captured coming from the stage at a Bernie Sanders rally in the personage of none other than actor John Cusack. Now, growing up, I love John Cusack movies. John Cusack movies, he made some of the movies that I wanted to be Lloyd Dobler. When I was growing up, I considered myself to be Lloyd Dobler. Everybody who listened to alternative rock and college rock considered themselves to be Lloyd Dobler. Anybody who didn't have big hair or it was into heavy metal or rap considered themselves to be Lloyd Dobler to one degree or another. Also, the movie Better Off Dead is one of my favorite movies ever. Lane Meyer, I Want My $2. It's a classic, classic movie. It just so happens that John Cusack is a freaking lunatic and a major league dick. He blocked me on Twitter. He's one of the first, him and Meghan McCain were one of the first people to ever block me on Twitter before I even knew what Twitter was about. I don't know what I ever said to John Cusack. I know what I said to Meghan McCain, but I called her the lucky sperm. Is what was her biggest accomplishment, and it still remains her biggest accomplishment. But John Cusack, I don't think I ever said anything to John Cusack. the left circulates lists of people to avoid, and somehow, sort of as a badge of honor, maybe I'll have to update my resume. Somehow I made the list of people to avoid, conservatives who won't conform. So John Cusack was out on the campaign trail with Bernie Sanders over the weekend, and he essentially he's calling for a revolution. Now, there's really no such thing, with rare exception, there's no such thing as a peaceful revolution. And when it comes to communists, which make no mistake, that's what Bernie Sanders ultimately is. He calls himself a socialist, but there's barely a dime's worth of difference between the two. And he didn't go, you know, vacation or honeymoon in a socialist country. He went to a communist country. John Cusack is calling for a revolution from the stage. Now, this, I think, is much more damning if you want to go after Bernie Sanders than the low-level, probably never met Bernie lunatic ready to commit violence in Iowa. This is a guy who, by the way, has a net worth, according to the internet, so it must be true, but you know he's rich, a net worth of $50 million, John Cusack. He hates the rich, but he, like Bernie, has adapted his language. Once Bernie became a millionaire, Bernie stopped bitching about millionaires. It was just about billionaires. John Cusack, in his speech, I'm not going to play the whole thing for you, but he was bitching about the billionaire class. The billionaire class. What is that, like 150 people in the country? Maybe. Is there that many billionaires? I don't know. They're not sitting on a pile of cash. They just happen to own a bunch of stock in companies that they created. And what's funny is the vast majority of them are leftists. So if they want to fund their own guillotine, let them. But John Cusack essentially calls for revolution right from the stage of a Bernie Sanders rally. This is much more disturbing than a low-level nobody working for the campaign.
If you haven't heard, but this very same guy, the guy with the future in his eyes, filled with his spirit, filled with compassion, filled with love, with a fierce love for human beings, happens to be leading a revolutionary movement that is unprecedented in American history. Truly. That should have gotten more applause, because we have to take back the meaning of the word revolution. We're not talking about a Nike commercial. We're not talking about a can of soda. We're talking about a radical redistribution of economic and political power, a real revolution.
And the crowd goes wild, and he wants to use the force and power of government to do that. That's why the left wants to disarm people. But don't you love that? We need to do radical revolution. We need to redistribute wealth and power and everything. And God forbid, our wealth and our power is dispersed across the country. Realistically, you can have as much of either as you desire, within limits, as long as it doesn't start to infringe on others. That's how our system, at least on the power front, is supposed to be designed and was designed. It's just been bastardized by people with the philosophy of Mr. Cusack there. The crowd's cheering, yes, we need to go and take it back. We need to, billionaires are immoral, billionaires are the problem, billionaires are criminals, they need to be imprisoned, they need to be destroyed, they need to be re-educated. All of this stuff is being said right from the stage at a Bernie Sanders rally and cheered by the crowds. Cheered by the crowds. Does that bother you? That bothers me a hell of a lot more than some guy in Iowa who looks like he hasn't taken a shower or kissed a girl in about 15 years, sitting there talking about how he wants re-education camps, because it's coming right from the stage with the candidate. That's a problem. Revolution. We need a revolution. We need to you need to seize wealth. You need to take power, seize power from other people. In the United States of America, the power rests with the people. Your life is what you make of it. The left does not approve of what you've made of your life in most cases, because it is not left enough. It is not pure enough. So they must seize your power from you, the power for you to decide what to do with your life, and then impose their will on you. That's significantly more disturbing to me than anything said anywhere else. Speaking of disturbing things, today is lobby day in the state of Virginia, where the citizenry is allowed to and encouraged to go to their capital and have a discussion with their legislators. Now, this should be the essence of what government is, right? Theoretically, that's what it's supposed to be, but it is now a threat to democracy. Governor Blackface Northam has declared a state of emergency because too many American citizens and citizens of Virginia were going to show up carrying their firearms. By the way, as Virginia does its best to try and pass legislation to seize and ban all kinds of firearms, this is what happens when the left gets in power. And I tell you, there's a lot of hype around on the right about the sanctuary city and county movement that's going on in the Second Amendment in Virginia. And it's great. The majority of counties there have declared themselves, they will not, they're non-binding resolutions, but still, that's basically what the gist of the left is doing on, in a few cases they've codified it in law, but that's what the left is doing in on immigration around the country. So that it's being weaponized against them, I like. But it is, while it's very heartening to see what Virginia is doing now, in reaction to Democrats getting power and then doing what Democrats do, it would have been better if they'd had this energy and this sort of mobilization before the election. So you wouldn't have elected a whole bunch of radical left-wing gun-grabbing Democrats in the first place. It's almost too late. Once the horse is out of the barn, what's the point in closing the barn door? So the movement, the energy, I support. Absolutely. I just wish it had been used better. It had been used properly to prevent these gun grabbers from getting power in the first place. They won. This is what happens when you win. They don't give a damn about what the citizenry says. They've got 2 years of unfettered control. They can do whatever the hell they want. And all your grousing and griping about it isn't going to make up for the fact that you should have put this kind of energy into electing Republicans. It should be a cautionary tale, a lesson for the future. But the left is taking full advantage of that. Remember David Hogg, little boss hog, the 110-pound loser from Florida who was a media-created sensation because he's a radical lefty? Well, he's back. He's still out there trying to push the no-gun agenda. He released a video. He's probably going to be on MSNBC today talking about how he can't go out there because there's so many threats and so many problems, blah, 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 blah. All the guns, all the guns, all the guns. Listen to the video that he released. He inspired dozens, and I say that mockingly, dozens of fellow left-wingers to post their own videos about how horrible this is, what's going on in Virginia, that people would carry firearms, which they can't now, on the state capitol grounds because Governor Blackface has banned it. You know, gun control started as a way to make sure that former slaves didn't get guns and, you know, go after their Democratic masters after they were freed by the Republicans. And now Democrats are still using it. I'm telling you, the only thing that's changed about the left is the tactics. The goals remain the same. Listen to little boss hog here.
The Second Amendment is being used as a right to oppress our First Amendment as children to say that we should be protected, not guns. So what I'm going to ask you to do is record a video with the hashtag #IStandWithVirginia expressing your support for common sense gun laws in the state of Virginia, because right now we can't show up because the Second Amendment is being used to actively threaten to kill people, including children. So record your video with hashtag #IStandWithVirginia for why you support gun violence prevention legislation in the state of Virginia. Thank you, and fuck Nazis.
He's so edgy the way that he dropped an F-bomb at the end there, isn't he? Now, I will say I commend David Hogg's commitment to getting rid of guns. It is so thorough and so complete that he had his biceps surgically removed and appears to be taking hormones to prevent their regrowth. Or he's transitioning. I don't know which. Probably a little of both. But I love how he refers to himself as a child and children. He's an adult. He's fair game. He's a normal human being, theoretically, but he doesn't act like it. He is wrapping himself in what protected him when he was in high school because it worked. Left sticks with what works. Oh, people are using their Second Amendment rights to silence our First Amendment rights. Who was shot? It was shot. How and where? This whole thing is being portrayed, by the way, by the fellow travelers there with Comrade Hogg as a white nationalist, white supremacist movement. That's what it is. All these evil, evil white people. So all you black and brown people or anybody who's off white who shows up in Virginia, in Richmond, to protest today the stripping of your Second Amendment rights in the state of Virginia, remember, you're just white. You're nothing but white. You're a white supremacist, and you're there supporting white supremacy. These people are freaking nuts. They keep showing us who they are. Sooner or later, it'd be nice if we started to believe them, wouldn't it? And then acted accordingly, and voted these people out of office, marginalized them the way they try to marginalize anybody who isn't them. Hold them to their own medicine. Make them take their own medicine. That it's a giant suppository is their own damn fault. Anyway, we're going to play the Bo Snerdly interview now because it's a holiday and because I've got cleanup duty to do. My wife's going to kill me, by the way, for saying what I said at the beginning of the show. But hey, hopefully she won't listen to this today because she'll never need to know. Just one of those days. I told her, don't go to work today. You had a horrible weekend and you probably need more time to recover. But nope. She's a trooper. More of a trooper than me. Anyway, I'll be back here tomorrow. We'll have the build-up, a preview of the impeachment hearing as the House managers prepare to present their case. I don't know how you convince people that made-up crimes are crimes, but hey, Democrats have gotten this far not being bound by reality. Why the hell would they start tomorrow? That is all we have for today. Hopefully you have a short week. Otherwise, have a great Monday. Friday will be here soon enough. See you then.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast, the Friday video interview edition. It is the 6th day of December 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your Mr. Rourke as we prod the mind of somebody much more interesting than I am. This week is no exception, although only just barely. I've mentioned this guy on the show before. I've told you to harass him on Twitter. I'm going to do it again just because it's fun. You know him as Bo Snerdly. The law knows him as James Golden. He joins us now. Welcome to the program, James.
Derek Hunter, my pleasure. Yeah. Finally.
That's right. They said it couldn't be done, or maybe they said it shouldn't be done. I don't remember what they were saying, but they warned against this. Now, I'm not just having you on here to harass you for just the sake of joy, really, of harassing you. You actually did something this week that's very important.
Wait.
Wait a minute.
See, that's what happens when you insult me. My phone just went off. Someone saying, what happened?
Oh. So your phone is very defensive of you. Hey, you know what? Everybody needs a hobby. Hey, at least you got a friend. Siri won't pick you up from the bar, but at least it'll have your back when somebody's attacking you via Skype. But let's get into what you did this week, because you're all over the news and it has nothing to do with your day job. You're actually doing something very important. You're starting a new PAC, Political Action Committee, to bring the black vote back home to the Republican Party.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is, Derek, what happened, I looked at the political landscape earlier in the year, and I said, I just can't sit out another political season watching the same racist narratives being used by the left to paint Republicans, conservatives as bigots and fearmongers. I mean, it was just unconscionable the way, especially if you remember earlier in the political season before they went off on this impeachment binge, every other week there was some racist angle they were pulling out of the closet, usually over nonsense. And so I decided this time around I have to just come off the sidelines and jump into the fray. So I founded a political PAC with Autry Pruitt, who is a conservative, a bit younger than I am, but boy, is he sharp. This is a guy that wrote a book during the 2016 election cycle defending President Trump, went out on his own dime to campaign for him across the country. Autry has a background in real estate. He has a background in political matters. very, very sharp guy. So the two of us have been working to lay the infrastructure for this. And now we're going to rev it up in full gear. We have some objectives.
It's
the first objective.
Well, we'll get to the objectives in a second, but I want to talk about the logistics of this because I just want to impress upon people that this isn't something you're doing in a couple of hours of spare time and you just decided on a whim to open up a website and fill out a couple of forms. Starting a political action committee is an arduous process. There are flaming hoops that you have to jump through. So this is something that you've, while it's just coming to light now, you sort of glossed over. There's a lot of legwork and thought that goes into this. How long have you really been working on this thing? And talk a little bit about the idea of setting one up, the difficulty of it.
6 months. We've been doing the filings. We've been working on it for 6 months. We've been planning. We've been having so many hours and hours and hours of discussion about the messaging, about how we want this to move, looking at how we wanted to begin the initial round of staffing. And it's only the initial round because we've got a long way to go. And we have a very ambitious agenda. And Derek, thank you for asking that because most people don't know. You started a pack. Wow, that's easy. No, this has been already 6 months,
right,
half
and
a year.
Lets people know that you're very serious about this because most people would look at this and go, 6 months, to hell with it. I'm not going to do it. If I can't do it tomorrow in a Twitter world, if you can't do something in 5 minutes, what's the point in doing it? Whereas to do something like you're launching here, it actually takes a commitment and it shows a commitment to potential supporters out there that you're not in this for a flash in the pan. You're in this for the long haul.
No. And, you know, in the environment where in some cases people have a little mistrust of political PACs because of some of the ways they've been used, we had to think about that too. But so we've decided we're going to be transparent with how we do things. We are all committed. Everybody that's working with this PAC. And we only have a few people on board right now. And again, our plans are we're hoping to grow it so that it becomes an institution in every state in this country, especially in states where there are blue cities. But I'll come back to that in a little bit. But yeah, so it took a bit of a commitment. Autry picked up his family from Texas and moved here to Florida so that we could do this. And what I'm telling you, there's a lot of sacrifice that has gone in this already. There's been a lot of sacrifice. But this is so important that we both felt that whatever it is we have to sacrifice, we're going to do it in order to make this happen.
Talk a little bit about the importance of diversifying the black vote. It wasn't always 91% to 7% or 8% for Republicans. It right after the Civil War, it was overwhelmingly for Republicans. That somehow the Democrats got not only a monopoly, but got a generational monopoly. I grew up in Detroit, as you know. We've talked about this, where someone like John Conyers had been representing an area of Detroit that he'd been there since the earth cooled. And it deteriorated significantly over his tenure. But the idea of the district voting for an alternative, not even just another Democrat, but a Republican, was so far beyond the pale. That's how far the Democratic talons have gotten into the black vote, that a district that now looks like it was Dresden circa 1944 still can't even entertain the idea that maybe the party that caused it to become like that doesn't have their best interest at heart. So you're up against generational muscle reflexes in a lot of ways, muscle memory of people just voting for the D, hunting for the D, voting for the D. How did it get to that point? And what is your plan to change that?
Well, it got to that point because there was no pushback. So for 50 years, very little pushback. Okay, when I grew up in Queens, New York, there was a Republican Party, there was a Democrat Party in my neighborhood. By the time I had left and grown, the Republican Party was long gone, never to be seen from again. Okay, and so you have city after city where there is no Republican presence. There are no conservative clubs. There are no Republicans in the neighborhood. And so what you get is constant messaging. The Republicans are evil. Everything that's wrong in your life, oh, blame it on the Republicans. It used to be blame it on the white man. Now it's just blame it on the Republicans. And So for 50 years almost, we've had this nonstop drumbeat of how evil Republicans are, how they mean to do harm, how they can do no good for you. And the Democrats have been very successful at using these racist narratives and these racist tropes and racist memes against conservatives and Republicans for 50 years. And so what happens? The Republican Party, and I don't mean this to knock on the Republican Party, I vote Republican.
There's a lot of blame to go around, James, and part of the reason that the vote is the way it is because the Republicans have given up the black vote. So attack them right where they deserve it.
So what happens is every election cycle, you get Republicans, oh, let's put $10 million or so in outreach. First of all, it's insulting. Let's reach out to the aliens, to the species over there that are not like us, and do outreach for the, you know what? That doesn't work. You cannot come to people every 4 years and say, oh, we're going to spend $10 million on you and we're not your enemy. Oh, please vote for us. We're really nice people. If you're not in the neighborhood, if you're not part of people's daily struggles and their daily aspirations, if you don't know who your neighbors are, if you're not demonstrating to your neighbors who you are, then how can you expect them to trust you enough with a vote, those that do vote? Now, you mentioned earlier the shape of some of these cities, and yes, that should be enough, and I think that is what the opportunity is. As you know, the recent polls show that President Trump has got 33% of the vote. Now,
Do you believe those polls?
I do. I think, well, I shouldn't say I do. I haven't seen the methodology, but I think it's possible. And I'll tell you why. I think it's possible because right now you have more black Americans working than at any other time in American history. You know, for the years that Obama was president, around this time of year, there were a lot of black families that couldn't afford Christmas for their kids. Okay? Now, people are working and have jobs. Guess what? Kids have Christmas this year. Families have jobs. In some cases, and I don't mean to minimize this, because there are a lot of black folks I know who are struggling and working two and three jobs in this economy to make ends meet. By the way, there are a lot of white people I know that are working two and three jobs in this economy to make ends meet, because that's just the way it is. You work hard if you want to achieve. But what President Trump has shown is that with the right kind of policies, the economy can grow. Obama had kind of written it off. This is the new normal. What you're going to do, wave a magic wand and make everything? Yeah, well, he didn't wave a magic wand, but guess what? Jobs are back because of policies. So, yes, it was vital. Also, don't discount the efforts that the president has made on matters of judicial reform and prison reform. People in the communities see that in various communities. Now, he hasn't achieved everything that he wants to do there, but what did Obama do? What did Hillary do when she's the one that called everybody super predators. Her husband was the one with the crime bill, and all these Democrats who voted for the crime bill are now trying to run away from it. Also, you have issues like school choice. That's a big issue. Derek, I found out just this week, I saw video of something that took place in Florida within the last 2 years. I had no idea this had happened because it was never covered in the mainstream media. Long story short, the NEA, when Gillum was running for governor, Gillum threatened to close a program at the behest of the NEA that allowed 118,000 minority kids in Florida and others to have school choice to go to schools with scholarship so that they could attend grade schools. And one of the things that Gillum did was promise to shut it down, to hurt over 100,000 black kids in Florida and more, and make sure that it didn't expand. These black parents, 10,000 of them, showed up in Tallahassee to protest and to demand that this program stay in place. Wasn't covered. This was the biggest civil demonstration in Tallahassee, Florida's history, even by black folks, even bigger than anything that occurred during the civil rights years. When the civil rights were, this was huge. It wasn't covered. So when people now look and say, well, how did DeSantis pull that victory off with these black voters? It was about school choice. And this is why this president and the policies that he's working on, trying to do immigration reform against the Democrat backwind of this, with his economic measure, with school choice, with prison reform and judicial reform, all of these things matter to people. So do I believe that it's entirely possible that his numbers are up above 30% among black folks? Yes, I believe it. Because they're doing things that affect people's lives.
It's one thing, James, and I know that your PAC is more focused on long term, but it is one thing to do well in the short term. The 2020 election, maybe if Donald Trump gets 20% of the black vote, it's over. But long term, you're talking not about winning the next election and then going off to the Caribbean, patting yourself on the back, drinking pina coladas all day. You're talking about changing voting habits long term. What are
we've had years of one party rule in black neighborhoods. We have to change that, okay? And it's not going to happen in one election cycle or two or even three. So what New Journey PAC is about, in the long term, we want to establish a presence in every single blue city in America, every single one. We want to demonstrate to our countrymen, to our fellow citizens, that conservatives, that Republicans, we are here as neighbors. We are here as your friends. We are here as your relatives. We are here as your countrymen to help, to listen, to do with actions and not words, to demonstrate what kind of people we are and to demonstrate to people that we want the best for every single American. We want the best for every American, regardless of their race, regardless of their sexual identity, regardless of any of those other factors. You are an American. We love America, and we want everybody to have access to the American dream. And so our long-term goal is to be in every single blue city and stay in there until we can convince and stay in there, period, as neighbors, to help.
The key to success to doing that strategy, and I think that's the absolute right strategy, is focusing on the heaviest areas first. But you have to recruit locally. You have to get people from within the communities to sort of rise up and stand up and be brave enough to say, I'm here. You all know me. By the way, I'm a conservative. You know, you have to come out as a conservative. I imagine you know, we talked a little bit about this last year at lunch, but explain the difficulties in recruiting people like that, because in a lot of ways, it's like stepping on a landmine. You're coming out as a conservative while people are going to look at you differently because of that muscle reflex, because of the generations of those other people are horrible racists. And then suddenly somebody comes up and says, I side with the racists. That's not what they're saying, but that's the way it will be perceived. And there's a lot of ostracizing going on if somebody stands up and comes out as a conservative. So talk maybe a little bit about how your mother is very liberal. Talk a little bit about how maybe you handled it when you discovered that you were conservative, or how you plan on sort of advising other people, because there will be blowback, especially in the beginning, for people coming out and saying they're conservatives.
You know, the people that some of my friends and my friends' parents in the church that I grew up in, Grace United Methodist Church in St. Albans, Queens, when I first started working with Rush, and then as a few years went by and people started to understand and see me in a very visible role sometimes, well, I was still behind the scenes, but you know what I mean. But understand that I was part of the program. So my mother comes to me one day. My mother's a diehard liberal. She was part of the Democrat Party machine in Queens. You know, she's still a diehard liberal Democrat, right? But my mother comes to me one day and she says, you know, some of my friends at church would really like to know what happened to you. what happened to you?
So would I, but that's for different reasons.
So I said, Mom, I'm so happy you asked me that. I said, here's what you tell your friends. You tell your friends that I, as a grown man, am living the values that I learned here in this church. I'm living the values that I learned, Mom, from you and from Dad. I've grown up to now embrace all the things you taught me when I was a kid. And the real question is not what happened to me, but what happened to you?
How did that go over?
It went over well, because you know, that was the last time I got asked that question. I'm a diehard Democrat, but even this week, my mom said something to me I thought was really amazing. She said, you know what? I don't like Trump. I didn't vote for Trump. I'm not going to vote for Trump, but I'm sick of the way that these people keep going after him and haranguing him and harassing him.
That's a big breakthrough for your mom, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get down to what you do, because super PACs, what they are and what they do is sort of it's like boxing a cloud. Nobody really knows what they do. You can't coordinate with candidates. You can't coordinate with campaigns, but you can – you got to pick your races, pick your spots, pick your points to go in. Are you guys going to be doing candidate recruiting and sort of – punching up their ability to campaign and briefing them on issues and how to communicate them? Are you going to be running campaign ads on behalf of candidates? Will you be involving yourself in primary races? I just want to know where this thing starts off and where you want to see it, not only where it starts, but where you want to take it.
Okay, here are some of the things that we're going to do. We are going to be in the battleground stage, and we are going to be messaging to Black folks. Right, to Black people in the battleground states where the president's victories were very narrow and where moving the needle with Black voters could mean the difference between winning and losing those states. And we are going to message about the things that this president has done and the things that their party has not done. And we're not going to do it in traditional ways. We have a few commercials on one of our websites that'll give you an idea of some of the ways that we're messaging. And some of those commercials are running. You can hear them on our website, newjourneypack.org, newjourneypack.org. Okay, so we're going to be doing some of that messaging, but we're also looking at some races outside of the battleground states. We have a brilliant potential candidate that's going to run in a high-profile seat that in Congress that a Black person lost last time. We're looking very closely at that race. There are some other people. There's a young man in Florida that we have our eyes on, and if he announces, we're going to totally get behind him. He's brilliant. We're looking at Black conservatives that we are going to support, and we want to, I understand, a lieutenant governor in North Carolina that we're going to be taking a look at, too. So the first thing we're going to do is look at Black conservatives that we can support. We are also going to look at conservatives that we can support, okay? Because a lot of times what conservatives get hit with are these racist narratives from the left, and very often they go unanswered. They are not going to go unanswered anymore. We are going to push back. We're going to push back hard, obviously depending on the resources that we're able to garner for this, but our plan is to push back hard when conservatives get hit with these racial narratives. Also, our conservative media figures, okay, they come under attack with this racist crap from the left. And the left organizes and tries to affect their sponsors and their advertisers and everything else. We are going to be ready. When this crap happens again, we are fighting back on behalf of our conservative media figures who bear so much of this hatred and these narratives, these ugly narratives from the left. So we want to be the voice of pushback. Now, yeah, on the more positive side, there are Democrats, like I just mentioned, in Florida, who bucked their own party so that they could help their own people with school choice. And you know what? If need be, if the only way that we can advance the cause to make sure that some of these issues that affect our country in terms of black folk, look, I'm not beyond saying we would help them too. I'm still thinking about how we would do that, because first things first, we have to get conservatives in. We have to make sure this president is reelected. Those are my number one priorities. And then we have to help our conservatives. We have to stand ready to defend our conservative media heroes. And I don't say this to blow smoke up your skirt, Derek, but like you, I mean, you are unafraid to speak out. You're unafraid to speak the truth. So what happens to guys like you? You guys become the target. And I've seen this. You know I've seen this from where I sit.
Yeah.
I've seen time after time after time these organizations that are no more than a handful of people that know how to use technology, that know how to use bots, that know how to make their presence look a lot larger, go out and try to hit advertisers, try to hit sponsors to shut up our media figures. Well, it's time we shut them down. Okay, so when they come out with this racist nonsense, we want to be ready to go totally 100% on the offense, not hoping.
What was your reaction in 2016 when Donald Trump went to Detroit and gave the famous "What the hell do you have to lose?" speech? Because I know that scared the hell out of the left. Donna Brazile wrote about it in her book, and she quickly ripped off an op-ed. Juan Williams wrote a whole book about it. It scared Democrats that Republicans were at least putting overtures out there and throwing out the $84,000 question, or whatever the hell the pyramid is now, $64,000 question, where what do you have to lose? How could things get any worse? When you saw that as a conservative, did you think finally somebody gets it, or did you think it was a – I mean, what was your reaction to that moment?
What Donald Trump has done, so many things that I love about it. First of all, Donald Trump doesn't give a rat's butt.
You can say whatever you want. You can say it however you want. Ass.
He doesn't give a rat's ass whether you are black, whether you're white, whether you're whatever. If you come after him, he's coming back at you, and he's coming back at you hard. That's one of the things I love about him. And he doesn't care. He's the first Republican male I've seen in ages that's an elected politician that's not scared when some black guy says something that's crooked and off the reservation to him. He comes and slams him completely back down. And all the other Democrats are, ooh, what a racist, ooh, what? He doesn't care. He just nails them anyway. Guess what, guys? For the timid Republicans who walk around with your tail between your leg, scared that somebody's going to call you racist, stand up and take notice. This is how you do it. You fight back. You don't back down from these people. You continue to elevate your position as hard as you can, and you don't give them a quarter because they don't give you one.
Let me ask you about the recruiting process, because one of the things that drives me nuts about the conservative movement, we may have talked about this in the past, is the sort of purity test. There seems to be a lot of peacocking around it. True conservatism is this, true conservatism is that. You're not really a conservative. You're not really a conservative. There's a lot of circular firing squads, but it's more of a slap fight, really. But when it comes to recruiting candidates, especially in blue districts where, like Gregory Meeks, who's in the news this week for spreading a lot of money around a campaign when he doesn't have an opponent. He spent almost $750,000. You got a situation where you could recruit a candidate who is, say, conservative on school choice, on education issues, but on other issues, they're just not. They're just not. Is it too early to think that there should be some sort of bar and just be happy with getting somebody out there? Or is there a criteria that they'll have to meet in order to get the New Journey PAC's sort of at least shine?
Look, here's my philosophy, and Archer and I have talked about this. If we get 70 to 80% of what we want in the candidate, we're good with it. There are certain places, and especially in areas like, look, Gregory Meeks is my mom's congressman. I know him. I've confronted him about stuff in the past, okay? And by the way, Gregory Meeks is also a nice guy, but that doesn't have anything to do with his politics,
right?
Okay? Very nice guy, but has nothing to do with his politics. There are black Republicans, by the way, finally coming back into some of those areas. One is running against AOC in her district, the part of her district that leans into Queens. So in answer to your question, look, I'm not running around with this conservative purity test. I know exactly what you mean. If we get 80% of what we want, if we get more than half the loaf, we're cool. We're gonna go. We need to win. You can have all these purity tests in the world you want. What good does it do when you've lost the House? What good is that going to do us if we lose the Senate? First, we need the numbers so that we can prevail most of the time. That's politics. Nobody prevails all the time. We need enough numbers so we can prevail most of the time and do what they do. Keep coming back until you get everything you want.
Are you prepared for the literal storm of feces that's going to come your way? Not just because of the organization that you're starting, but because of where you work. I guarantee you that the bridge trolls that work in the basement at Media Matters, they're now staffing up. They've got somebody who's going to scroll through your Twitter feed. They're going to find you on Facebook. They're going to find every email that you've ever sent to anybody. And then they're going to make sure that you guys at New Journey PAC follow the letter of the law to a T, to a degree that the government doesn't even do it. Are you guys prepared for that? Because, you already sort of had a bullseye on you to begin with because of your job, but now you're stepping out from behind and becoming the front to this thing.
Yes. Number one, that's one of the reasons I said transparency. We've talked about that in the run-up to this. We are going to do everything by the letter of the law. Not just the letter of the law, the spirit of the law. Okay? That's number one. Number two. Let them come at me. I've been called every name in the book. I don't care. You can call me whatever names you want to call me, because guess what? I'm going to call you a few back. And if you come at me, I'm coming back at you too. So we're on notice with each other. Come at me. I'm coming back at you.
So how can people get involved? What do you want from people? You're doing publicity this week because the organization just launched, and I think there's nobody who's listening who isn't going, yeah, right on, hell yeah, it's about damn time, let's do this thing, let's do it right. But that doesn't get anybody anywhere. A nice round of applause is great, but it subsides pretty quickly. What do you want the next steps to be as people learn about this?
We have to raise money. Money is the mother's milk of politics. This is the part that I felt most uncomfortable with, but you know what? Got to get over it. Okay? So I'm going to have to now join this race for donors and donations and all of that. You know, it's hard when you grow up and you're told never to ask people for money.
Right.
But when you're in an organization like this and you're in the political world, you have to ask for money. So in order to succeed, until we can do what I want to do ultimately, by the way, which is to turn some of what we're going to do with content into profit-making ventures so then we can support ourselves. But in this initial stage of newjourneypac.org, we have to raise money. We also have a community site that we're building called MAGA.black. MAGA.black. And that's where we hope to do a lot of content development. We're already talking. We've got some exciting things that we're lining up right now that'll be kind of fun. For the campaign, and also kind of surprising, we've got permission from a well-known entertainer that we can publicize the fact that he's a conservative, and so we're working that out right
you
now.
Can just say my name. I've given you permission.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, and so this is going to be an adventure. You know, it's going to be an adventure. I'm unafraid. You know. If people come at me, they come at me. If they come at us, they come at us. But we have to do the right thing here. What we want is for the best of for people. We're not doing this to make enemies. We're not doing this to be an enemy. We're doing this so that we can grow up in a country, Derek, where your kids can grow up and not be called a racist just because they happen to believe public policy should be this way or that way. We want to grow. We want to have your kids and my kids and my grandchildren, if I ever have any, is she a daughter? If grow up in a country where they're not going to be called Uncle Toms or foul names because they dare to think for themselves with the brain that God gave them. And why should they suffer these vile insults from people just because they want to use their brains, just because they want to get ahead? So we have to be unafraid as we move forward with this. And that's what we intend to do. We're just going to move forward with this.
What do you think, just out of curiosity, what do you think carries the more weight or has lost the most weight? Being called a racist or being called an Uncle Tom? Because I think racist has been cried so many times that there's still racism out there, but it gets lost in the, well, you're opposed to Obamacare, that's because you're a racist. Whereas Uncle Tom seems much more personal, and it is. I know you've been called that at least three or four times in your life, but it seems to be coming. That's much more personal and carries much more weight, particularly in the black community. The white people, I think, are especially white conservatives are kind of used. It's not a day that ends in Y unless we're called a racist because of something we don't agree with politically with Democrats.
Yeah, well, see, the Uncle Tom thing to me is so old. I mean, I don't even, if that's all you have, I mean, that's, when somebody calls me that, I'm like, seriously, is that all you have? I mean, your brain can't function on a higher plane than that? There's nothing new here. Bring me something new. So, no, both of them have lost their stink. Calling people racist, sadly, you can call, everything's racist. Everybody's racist. Everything's racist.
That's racist and, say that. That's just racist to say.
Right.
I have to pick your brain on a couple of things in the news just because I have the opportunity to talk to you, and texting you doesn't really translate well to a podcast. We had the big vote. Nancy Pelosi came out today. She parked her broom. She came out. She railed against how she's mad that somebody dropped a house on her sister. And then she said, without specifying what the articles of impeachment would be, that she's calling on the House, basically the Judiciary Committee, to move forward with articles of impeachment. It's as nebulous as you possibly can get. But it also, I'm slightly surprised that they went this far. But they're also pot committed at this point. Have Democrats painted themselves into a corner?
Yes. But I'm not surprised. I'm surprised you're surprised they went this far.
I'm surprised they did it so. I thought they wanted to flirt with it and try and keep people stringing along rather than actually, you know, jump. A lot of people hang out on the cliff in Acapulco. Very few of them actually jump in, but they all talk a good game. And now Nancy Pelosi's ready to cannonball.
Okay, who's your? You know, you're from Michigan. Who's that congresswoman from up there? Rashida Tlaib.
Yeah, she represents where I actually grew up.
Well, see, haha, you got one too. Okay.
Nowhere I've lived has been Republican. It's been horrible. I went to Elijah Cummings' district after that, so, you know, what do I know?
Love it. So what did Rashida tell us early on?
Yeah, we're going to impeach the mother scratcher.
Yeah, we're going to impeach the mother. Yeah, that's what she said. What has Al Green been honking about ever since he can? We're going to impeach him. What has Maxine been talking about? Maxine says, confront all those Trump people in the street, code language. Why don't you beat up Trump supporters and let's find some way to impeach him? The left has wanted to impeach Donald Trump ever since he came down the elevator. Election night, it was cast in stone. The moment that they got through crying when they found out Hillary lost, the next thought was, okay, we got to impeach this guy. And nothing is, this is all playbook. And now, when they impeach him, it will go to the Senate. He will be found not guilty. They will go back to their crazed base and say, well, we did our best, so please don't vote against us. And hopefully, we gain even more seats in the Senate. If we really are focused and we focus on those 30 congressmen and Democrat congressmen in districts where Trump won, we can use this to politically bludgeon them, and flip the House back. Only this time, hopefully, with a Speaker of the House that actually has the president's back instead of trying to stick a knife into it.
Yeah, it would be nice to have a Speaker of the House with contents in their underpants for a change. But that's one of the things that drives me most nuts, and I know because of the emails that I get from people who listen and watch this show, is that Republicans are really, really good in the abstract. As a minority party, look, I thought that I was fully expecting them to blow it in these impeachment hearings, just from a narcissism point of view, where they're like, the world is watching. Here's my 5 minutes to shine. I'm going to give a 4.5 minute speech, maybe ask a half-hearted question and just move on. But they didn't. They actually seemed to have a strategy that worked, that was smart, that sticks with it. But then you remember back 2 years ago, all the way back to 2010 or the Bush years, when Republicans had control over everything. And while they had the opportunity to do the things that they swore to us up and down my whole life that they wanted to do, reduce the size of government, give people some choices in Social Security and Medicare, things like that, choices, not mandated change, they not only didn't do it, they didn't try to do it. Whereas for generations, Democrats have been pushing towards socialized medicine, inching towards that, expanding Medicaid up, lowering the Medicare age down, so on and so forth. Republicans, why are Republicans so damn bad when the voters call their bluff, elect them, and say, this stuff you've been saying is great, go do it. And then they're kind of stuck there like, I don't know what to do, or I don't really want to do this. So that sort of disheartens voters a lot, I know, because I hear from people who get pissed off when Republicans have a shot to do the right thing that with real teeth, legislative teeth, and they don't do it.
This is why I think President Trump's ascendancy is so vital. From now on, if you have Republicans that go back to that old model, oh yes, we're going to repeal Obamacare on day one, and they don't repeal it. Oh yes, we're going to fix immigration, and instead they listen to the Chamber of Commerce and are fearful of doing anything that the president wanted to do on it. The president has, especially now if he wins re-election and has a chance to really expand the type of congressman that he's bringing in on his coattails. The Senate's a little bit more of a wash, but the House is where we have a lot of opportunity to make gains and get and really enlarge the amount of conservative congressmen that are in the House. That's why it's vital to have conservatives in there. Look, I believe in the big tent. You know, I'm not mad at Susan Collins when Susan Collins does a Susan Collins. You know, she's Susan Collins.
Right.
She's gonna do a Susan Collins. But guess what? On some real important things, Susan Collins is going to be with you. I'm not mad at her. But we need more conservatives in the House where the spending and appropriations happen and where we can shape a lot more policy that's going to go to the Senate. Even if it gets watered down in conference reports, we need to have – when you're watering down an already moderate bill, you're left with nothing. When you're trying to water down to get past the Senate a 90% conservative bill, well, you're going to get some of your objectives. And then you keep going back for more and keep going back for more. Incrementalism, like Democrats have done it over the years. So I think that President Trump has lit a fire under this party to show a lot of the people in this base and in the races that are closest to home, conservatives, either you play ball or we're going to send you home in the primary. I hope that's what's going to happen this cycle.
That would be nice. James, we have to do that podcast we talked about how I point out to the world you're wrong about music and how Jimi Hendrix is probably the most overrated guitarist in history. We have to get together and do that. We should have just recorded that conversation. But the website, again, is newjourneypack.org. And then the other one is MAGA.black. Is that right?
That's right.
And you can get all of that. You're at Bo Snerdly on Twitter?
Yeah, I am.
And you should harass him every single day to get me to guest host for Rush Limbaugh. And I don't know, send him tasteful nudes as well. Either one, I think, is the way to go. James, Bo, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Best of luck. And let's check in a couple of months and see if we can maybe do a status update on this organization, because I think it's wildly important.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you so much. And believe it or not, folks, he's really a good friend.
All right, we'll release the hostage. Thank you, James. Oh. That's all the time we have for today. And this week, it's Friday. Let's go get drunk. We'll see you here on Monday. Have a good one.